just saying, when you took the shop over,
there was loads of old postcards that we didn't sell. They weren't charged. They were sort of beyond sale, really. They were old black and white postcards, you know, pictures, photographs, more or less, you know. So anyway, I brought a load of those home, and I burnt thousands and thousands of old postcards. I'm kicking myself now.
What were people's favourites? What were the ones that always sold postcards?
Well, we used to sell a lot of saucy postcards, you know. Well, I'm saying saucy. We did operate a censorship, because some of the postcards you could buy, they were absolutely rotten, really, you know. They were awful. So we had comic cards, and some of them were a little bit near the novel, but nothing to what you could buy, you know. If you were, the postcard censorship was carried on. They used to have to submit their postcard range, comic cards, to this postcard censoring committee, which consisted of several sort of well-known businessmen. As a matter of fact, the Rowells, the sweet shop fame, they were on that committee at one time, I believe. And those postcards were, you know, what were permitted to be sold. Well, some of them were very crude, really. I mean, say, I'm not a prude. I like a bit of a laugh with the next person, but I don't have to resort to smut, really. It's a sort of thing that we used to censor ourselves, really. But we sold a lot of comic cards and a lot of pictorial cards, you know, principally of Peel. But we didn't stick to Peel. We used to sell a variety of cards. People used to compliment us on our stock of cards, you know. We haven't seen any cards like these before. Aren't they lovely, you know, they'd say. And I'd say, well, we try to keep a representative selection. And we used to always buy our cards from the you know, the same firms every year, the card reps used to come round, and they'd have their book with all these cards in, and say, well, we'll have so and so and so and so and so and so.
How many cards would you sell in a good day?
Oh, in a good day we'd sell, well, I don't know, suppose it'd be a few hundred anyway. Nearing 1,000, I would think, on a good day. Because people used to come in and we'd say, well, they're fivepence each, like that's in new money. Because they did go up after decimalisation, everything went up. But you can have 12 for the price of 10, you see. So they'd say, they'd be counting out their cards, and I'd say, well, you've got 8 here. If you can pick another 4, I'll only charge you for 10. Oh, right. Go and pick 4 more, you see. So we used to sell a lot of cards that way. And we used to sell letter cards, which were strips of cards, you know, you pulled out, and there'd be maybe 8 or 10 pictures of the Isle of Man and space on the back to write a little letter.
What did the visitors like about Peel? When they were sort of saying, oh, it's lovely
coming
to Peel.
People that used to come to Peel used to say, the people are so friendly, everything sort of is the same year after year, sameness, you see, not change, you know. They didn't want change, they wanted to come back to Peel and still to stay in the same places, the same houses maybe, and they wanted everything to be the same. They didn't want it to be changed in any way. They wanted to be able to go across the road onto the beach. They wanted to have the busy coach trade at one time there used to be morning trips, midday to 2 o'clock. It was always a food stop, you see. We used to always stop for meals around the island coaches. And we used to get people that were staying in Douglas used to come in year after year, and you'd say to them, oh, hello, you're over again, I see. And they'd say, oh, yes, we wouldn't miss Peel for the world. And they used to come, and they used to love to come to Peel, because it was, the beach was a big attraction, because people from like industrial areas where they must have thought they were in heaven when they could walk along the beach and they could look out and they could see for miles to the, right to the horizon, really. And rather than looking out on a brick walls or slate roofs or chimneys or whatever. And they used to really love it, and they used to say to me, I used to stand behind the counter on the left looking out towards the harbour side, and you'd see all sorts of things happening down there. And these people used to say, and we always had time to talk, we'd always have a word with them and talk. Even when you were serving people, they'd be standing at the back of the shop, not interfering with you taking people's money and serving people, but they'd stand at the back of the shop, and in between customers you'd be talking. And some people used to say to me, you get money for doing this, do you, Harry? And I'd say, oh yes, a few bob, not too much for a cup or two. And then they'd say, well, I don't know, I think you should pay for this view. And I, at times, used to more or less agree with them, because it was lovely. There was everything. You'd see the sea in all its moods. You'd see the sun out and the people on the beach and kids enjoying themselves in the water and all sorts of things used to happen.
Who else would be trading with you on the front if you kind of ran your eye along, and what would they be up to?
Well, there was...
maybe starting, when you first started, yeah.
Starting on the corner, there was Mrs. Gale, had the little shop on the corner of Crown Street, you know, on the front of the Crown Street. Then there was the cafe there. They used to sell ice cream out through a window and serve meals during the meal hours. And then next door to that was a little shop that was... right on the corner of the lane by Imperial Building, Imperial House, like. That was owned by, at one time, the first people in that I can remember was when we were there. We'd been in our shops for about a year, I think, and then a chap called Bernard Orrell, he opened it as a souvenir gift shop, you know, and beach shop. And we were always friendly, we never had any falling out or trouble. And then coming along from there was, John Kinvig and Lily, his wife, had the cafe on the corner, what is now, I think it's called the Arbor Lights or something. In theirs it was called the, what was the name of the cafe?
Sunset City or something.
Sunset Restaurant, yeah. Or something it was called, I think. I can't just remember, John. Anyway, then there was a little place there that opened up. Oh gosh, what was that? What happened to that? I can't think now. Anyway, it opened up as a shop.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, sorry about that noise. Anyway, then there was us, of course. Then the next door to us was, when we first went there, a chap called Johnny Quayle, Nipper Quayle, had it, and he also had boats in the harbour. He was running this as a cafe. It was called the, what was it called? I don't know what they called that. When it was a cafe, I can't remember what Johnny called it, but anyway, he sold out to Nigel Kermode. Nigel was there for a few years, and then Nigel sold out to Winnie Gray, who's got the cafe in that area now. And then next door to that was a commissioner's yard, which opened up into a big sandstone wall and a big green gate. And I had permission from the commissioners to put my vehicles on there. I had a van and I had a car. My wife used the car, I used the van. And I used to park there, handy, you see, for, you know, access and, you know, if we ever wanted any transport. And then next to that was Simpson's Cafe. next to Simpsons was people called Clucas had it. Mrs. Clucas and Mr. Clucas, the father and the mother, they had a furniture business in Douglas. And they lived in Douglas normally, but they had this house that they used to use in the summer. And they had two sons and a daughter who used to come and stay there. One of the sons was a doctor. He was an eminent doctor, really. He was in Belfast Hospital. What's it called? They call that famous hospital in Belfast. That
Queen's or something?
Queen's, yeah. I think. No, maybe
I'm wrong.
Victoria. Right. Victoria yes. was. Yeah, he was an eminent surgeon
there.
Yeah,
it was something
royal. Yeah. Yeah. And he had... they used to come over and spend the summer there with his family. He had a couple of kiddies, and his wife used to come up. She was an eye surgeon or an eye specialist or something. They were lovely people. They were really nice, you know, nice, friendly folk. And Gillian, the daughter, used to come over and stay in the summer in there too. She is now working in Nobles Hospital as a medical secretary or something, I think. Gillian.
So they're getting towards the end near the pool. That
No. This is coming toward where the fun fair is now. Then next to them was, I don't know, that was just an empty space. I think there was garages. That's right, garages. And then the place where Dave Bates is now, that was owned by Mary Quirk and her mother. Mary Quirk's mother, that was a cafe in its day when we were first there. Used to be absolute mass of cafes in there, you know, restaurants where you could get a meal midday and tea time and that. And Mary Quirk and her mother were there for many years. Mary has just recently died, incidentally. I don't know whether interested in that, but Mary was there for many years. Mother died some years ago, but Mary kept the cafe going. And after that, there was what was next to there? Oh, there was a kipper yard originally there, but that was all pulled down and new houses built on it for the commissioners. And then they built the houses at the back of in Queen Street area, you know, in Beach Street. They pulled down a lot of old property that was there, and they built these modern corporate commissioners' houses, which was, I suppose, a big improvement in many respects, but it certainly wasn't as picturesque, like. But of course, people have got to have decent living conditions, haven't they?
I was just thinking, actually, you made me think of the old, what is now the pool that's been knocked down. Do you remember that being built or when that was new?
I don't remember it. Actually, we weren't in Peel at that time, but it's not all that old, actually. It wasn't all that old, because they used to have the
Trefogog,
out on the headlands there.
Did that pool used to be used quite a lot? Because when I was a boy, not really used.
No, it wasn't fit to be used for many years. But in the old days, I'm talking now, pre-war, it was used. It was used. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then there was the big hut on the top of the headland there. Used to be the, what did they call them? Church Hostel Association, CHA, I think it was. Church Hostel Association. That was originally the battery for the local, going back to the First World War now. That's before my time even. But it used to be, apparently it was a site where they used to train the naval reservists up there. And then they gave it up and it was taken over by CHA, Church Hostel Association, I think it was called. And they used to have people coming over and staying in this. They made it into like a holiday home. And that was quite a...
When did that get knocked down then?
Oh gosh, John, I don't know. That was a few years ago now, but Walter Gale, remember Walter Gale? I don't suppose you would really, would you? Walter Gale. He used to have a shop up at the top of Stanley Road, a greengrocer's shop and a and general sort of stores where, who's there now? Oh, what do they call it now?
I think they still call it Gale's Fair.
Oh, Gale's Fair, that's right, Gale's Fair. Well, that was originally Walter Gale and his wife, Kath, who had the that shop. They bought, when it was being pulled down, Walter Gale bought all the bricks for that, or from that, and all the wood and, you know, material, really. And he saved all the bricks, he saved a lot of the timber, he saved most of the timber and the fittings, and used them in various manners, and, you know. He was a tremendous bloke, Walter. He had a whole lot of garages at the back of his place when they bought the Imperial there. And I used to garage my car in there when they closed the commissioner's yard there. But he must have had about a dozen or 18 garages in there.
It's interesting, just when you were talking about, you know, before you were born and the battery and everything.
Yeah.
Could you remember a bit about, you know, your early life in your mum's house and what it was like to grow up in a boarding house? And,
oh, it was great, really. It was great. We used to have a little bit of work to do.
Was life like there, you know?
It was okay. You met new people more or less every week. You had strange, I'm not saying strange in the strange sense, but different people every week coming in, and they'd bring their kids, like, and used to get to know these kids, and they'd come over and they used to hang around with us, you know. I spent my early childhood, I think, up to my waist in water down on Douglas Promenade, because we used to spend a lot of time down on the shore at Douglas, which we used to call it the shore there, not the beach, but with the rowing boats and, you know, helping the blokes with the boats and all this sort of thing. And these kids used to come along with us, they'd tag on, you know, and the mothers used to, well, I don't know what their mothers used to think, but my mother used to say to them, now, if you're taking so-and-so out with you today, be careful, because they're not used to what you're used to doing. And we used to go climbing on rocks and all sorts of things, and, oh dear, I don't know.
What would be going on Douglas Beach then when you were there?
Well, there was the Punch and Judy man, and Salvation Army used to come down, and there was various other sort of beach activities, and there used to be thousands and thousands of deck chairs in those days, and they used to stack them up. Well, people used to hire a deck chair, and it was so much, and you got so much back when you returned your chair. You see, well, a lot of them didn't bother. They used just to get up and walk off and leave their chairs. Well, we used to go around collecting these chairs and bringing them back, and sometimes you'd get money back on them, and sometimes you wouldn't. Sometimes the chairs you see. But it was all part and parcel of living and existing. But it was great fun, really. It was fun. My father was out working, worked all hours, you know. The hours were awful, really. I can remember when I went first into business, into work, I used to work for my father for a while, because work was scarce over here. You couldn't get jobs, you know. So I used to work in the business with my dad, and
the grocery business,
and you'd be working from 9 a.m. or 8:30 a.m. till 11, 12 o'clock at night sometimes, especially at the weekends. The weekends were hard work. And then in 1941 I joined the Royal Air Force, and, well, to be honest with you, I never had it so good.
So why were the weekends so busy?
The boats used to run instead of midweek or ad lib as they run now, more or less. They were all at the weekend. Everything was geared to the weekend. There was a boat every day out, but most of the holidays were weekends. It started at the weekend. Friday night you finished work, and then Saturday you came on your holidays to Douglas in Thylaman, and then you had a week or a fortnight if you were lucky, and you went back on a Saturday. And Well, in those days, there was an awful lot of boats running. There was, I think, the fleet of steam packet boats in those days was something like 13 boats or something of that order, you know.
So the Saturday changeover, he'd be busy for the boarding houses?
Yeah, not to put too fine a point on it, was murder, you know. And then the boarding houses would be ordering their supplies for the week, you see, and they had to be delivered on Saturday. Well, I've seen me going out with the driver on a Saturday night delivering stuff to the promenade houses when we'd start off at 11 at night. And you'd be going along delivering. And this, you must remember, would be when you were 15, maybe. If you were 15, you were, that would be it, 15, 16. And the hours you worked were incredible.
So what would you be delivering to them? And
we'd be delivering bacon and eggs and, you know, provisions and groceries and stuff. And it was murder. Some of the houses you'd go to, there was one house particularly, and they were very, very highly organised. And this is after the war now, I'm talking, and there was one or two summers when I used to take a van out and deliver, you see, because we couldn't cope otherwise. So particular day, I'd perhaps do my prom run, as I called it. You used to have to pick your time there, because otherwise it was a nightmare trying to get to the houses. And I used to always leave the shop, if I could, loaded with a full van, a big van full of stuff. And I'd go along the prom, and you knew who you could call on, at what hours, you know, and there was one particular house I used to call on, and they were so highly organised. I used to go in, I used to park outside the door first, to go in, and I'd say to the lady in charge of the kitchen, hello, Miss So-and-so, I've got some stuff for you. Shall I put it in its usual place? And she'd say, oh, yes, Harry, thank you very much. And she said, do you want any help? I'd say, well, no, I'm all right if you you're busy. So she'd say to one of the staff, well, you're going to help Harry with the stuff, you see. So I'd say to the person, well, you stay in the store and I'll bring it to you. You can put it away and then you'll know where it is. Oh, righto. So that was how it went on. And there was other places you went in and they'd be playing hell with you. Oh, you would arrive now, you would arrive now. And I say, well, look, when do you want me to arrive? Oh, I don't bloody well know. You know, you get all sorts of abuse. And you used to think, well, they're all frazzled, you know, their nerves are all shot to pieces. So you used to sort of calm it down and say, well, look, if it's not convenient now, tell me when it is. So they'd calm down then and say, oh, bring it in. You know, that was it. But, oh, sometimes you'd call places. I remember calling at one place once and they had it was a fella that was running the place. I can't think of his name now. But he had this place in one of the drives. And I went there one day and the police were all out there. And I thought, so I pulled up. I said to the bloke, the copper on at the door, what's going on here? Oh, there's a fella in there with an axe. So I said, what do you mean with an axe? So he's threatening the proprietor, he said. So I said, well, you know, what's going on? So it calmed down a bit. So I went in and there he was. And I said, what's going on here? He said, oh, the kook has gone berserk. He's had too much to drink and he's threatening everybody with an axe. So that's how it got, John. I'm not exaggerating now. This is sort of, it may not be quite as it was, but that's the rough idea what used to happen many a time. But I was always made very welcome at this particular house on the front because they realised that we were busy too, and they were busy, but they were very highly organised, these particular people. They're no longer in business. As a matter of fact, the hotel has been knocked down now, it's gone. But It was one of the good houses, and people used to say to me, well, you could probably tell us, where's a good place to stay? And I used to always say, well, you'll get well fed, you'll get well looked after, and it's immaculate. Try there. And I'd give them the name of the... And they used to do quite a lot of extra business, you know, if they... From recommendations from people, you know, tradespeople.
So the visitors would ask you, seeing you in van, they'd say, hey, you know what goes on.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah, some of them. I could tell you some hair-raising stories, John.
Oh, go on.
There was one place... I can't tell it.
You don't have to tell me the exact place, you just...
Well, no, I'll just say this. It's a particular house that we used to call on. And the kitchens were always in the bowels of the earth, like. And sometimes they'd have, like, an extension built out over the yard to extend the kitchen out into the yard. Like a greenhouse type of thing, you know, glass-covered roof and glass-covered sides and that. Glass-covered... It was only one side, because the walls were like that on each side, the house wall and the divining wall. And this particular time, I've been going to this place for years, and they always went down. They had a big kitchen downstairs, and they had all the various ranges and stuff there. And this particular time, I went in. I'd been going there for years, and you went in down the stairs into the kitchen, and they had this big table, and a huge table it was, like a big pine dining table. That was always in the middle of the floor, like, and round it, I used to think, was a carpet runner. They walked on it for years, going near to this place. Anyway, this particular time, they'd had an accident. Something had fallen from the roof, and had to demolish this old greenhouse thing at the back. And, of course, it let a lot of light in. And it was, you know, when you went down into the kitchen, you thought, oh, this is a nice bit of light here now. And when I looked down at the floor, it wasn't a carpet. It was just food that had been trodden into the floor. It was absolutely appalling. And I'd walked on that for years, you know, a few years, really. So they never swept that or never scrubbed that floor. I'm damn sure they hadn't. But it was awful. And it showed everything up in a... You know, in a very sort of bright light. It wasn't as light as this room, but it was a lot lighter than it was because of the, you know, like the accumulation of muck over the years on the glass had made it more or less opaque. But, that was...
What other things did you used to see when you were going round on your rounds? The good, the bad, the ugly?
Well, yes, there's lots of things I'm not to mention, but, but it was a bit, brought you down to earth with a bump.
Human nature.
You wondered how people lived. And the staff sometimes were, you know, they were rough, dead rough sometimes. Mm. And some of the boarding house owners and keepers used to be pretty rough too in their way. But it was all part of life's rich pattern, you see.
So they'd be sort of rough in the sense of a hard trade, and they'd be...
Oh, yes, it was hard work. It was hard work, and it was sort of stressful, I suppose, and they used to get sort of stretched out, I suppose you'd call it, stressed out. Yes.
So you mostly worked for your dad more than your mum?
Yes, yeah, I did... used to do bits in the house when we were getting a little bit older, like, but...
What sort of things would that be?
Well, we used to do minor sort of jobs, like, in the winter. My granddad, he was a brilliant bloke. He was only little, but he lived with us, you know, my mother's father he was, and he was 89 when he died. And when he died, I'd be about 13. But he and I used to put window cords in and, you know, maintain the property. I don't know if you ever put sash cords in windows, but it's quite a ticklish job, really. You know, you've got to take the window out and you've got to get your cords in. And we used to do that, he
Not
and
easy.
I. Yeah, we used to do that, and we'd do little jobs, you know, on various.
You're saying things, about when you were talking to your sister about the candles.
Oh yes, in the early days. Yes, the candles in the early days. Like nobody had electricity throughout in those days. You couldn't afford it. You see, a lot of people in the Isle of Man, they used to take people in to help with the rates and you know, their running expenses, because they didn't make a lot of money. I'm sure they didn't, because when I was in business, sometimes you'd have to be very, very careful at the end of the season that you didn't give somebody too much credit. You had to have your finger on the credit pulse all the time, because otherwise, when it came to September and they closed the doors, you wouldn't see those people until next year, if you were, you know, maybe. Some of them were all right. Some of them were very, very good and very honest. You know, they would pay up. But others, if you didn't know them, well, you're always a bit worried that you weren't going to get paid at the end for the last month's groceries or whatever you were supplying. And there's tales of Stevie Quirk, the butcher. You might not know Stevie. Excuse me.